I will not tread the paths of the world. If I am free to do so, I will follow the holy Dharma. This is Buddhist Books Podcast, episode 280, Padmasambhava, part 19, in which I will continue reading The Life and Liberation of Padmasambhava. We'll be reading Canto 37, and if it's very long, perhaps that's all we'll read. If it's not, then we'll read 38. We'll see how it goes. If this is your first time, then feel free to start at the beginning of the Padmasambhava playlist by clicking right there, and you can start at Padmasambhava Part 1. All right. For those of you who didn't just click away, but you're new, you heard me mention earlier this is Buddhist Books 280, and notice 280 ends with a zero. So if we bring up the 10-sided clock, zero corresponds with Padmasambhava. So, I mean, for now, it's Tibetan Buddhism. And the 1, 3, 4, 6, 7, and 9, you might notice, are this symbol here, which here, specifically, I use to represent pre-sectarian early Buddhism, although it's from the Ashoka period, but I mean the actual image. But nonetheless, we read this when most of the time is what I'm saying. And when the episode number ends in 5, then we read some Shingon Buddhism. And when it ends in 2 or 8, we read forms of Chan or Zen, basically, to cut short. If you are interested in Zen, you can click here for the Zen playlist. And if I should have done this as I was going, if you're interested in the Tipitaka of pre-sectarian early Buddhism, translated directly into English from the Pali by the Pali Text Society, just for you, then you can click here for the Tipitaka playlist. Bye. And what was the third thing? Shingon Buddhism. If you're interested in Japanese Vajrayana, I like to get, my idea is that by having one eye in Tibetan Buddhism and one eye in Japanese Vajrayana, then I'll get a clear 3D picture of, for example, you know, 7th century Indian Vajrayana Buddhism. And then also get to see the ways that they've unfurled and flowered into these beautiful traditions that are have things in common and things that differentiate them. So, anyway, I hope that you enjoy your stay here for the episode. Now I'm going to get to today's reading. Canto 37. The Glance at the Region to be Converted. Now, having seated himself on Mount Gurdrakuta, Padma said, quote, I have looked where there was a region to be converted. It is like a rising sun in a mirror. It has the form of Sintamani, which does not set. Versed in the tantras of the wisdom born of tradition, I do not fear to uphold the Dharma. I'm sorry, I'm just going to pronounce it like an American. The Dharma, forgive me, it's the most comfortable way. I feel like a poser if I try to pronounce it with a rolling R, which rules over beings. Sorry, I'll read that line again. I do not fear to uphold the Dharma, which rules over beings. Versed in the tantras of the wisdom born of reflection, I do not fear the debate of the dogma with the unfaithful. Versed in the tantras of the wisdom born of contemplation, I do not fear to test the limits of the spiritual faculties. If I am not Buddha by name, I am he from having attained the 4 degrees of saintliness of the Suramana. The chief and guide who proclaimed the Dharma has disappeared, and his following no longer supports him. Although the ancient root text has been carried away, the Dharma is not extinct. No more than fat lasts in the mouth of hyenas that carry it away, does faith remain en route. By making moderate oaths, one does not acquire boon companions. End quote. Having stirred up these thoughts, he looked with the eye of intuitive knowledge. The karma of ignorance was obscuring the minds of all beings. Not seeing even what was near them, they misunderstood their own minds. Not hearing even the explanations, they were in enormous obscurity. Calling out for happiness, they found only the cycle of suffering. In the region to be converted, not one of them was saved. It was then that, to the lake dazzling immaculate of Uddiyana, in order to explain the Dharma to the Dakinis, and thinking to develop the meaning, the saint appeared in Dhanakosa. As after a rain, the sun and the rainbow make a prism in the clouds, the 4 Dakinis of the sea islands assembled, pronouncing the secret mantras, the symbolic language of the Dakinis, following the diamond path like its shadow, the Nagas of the sea, the gods of the planets and stars of space assembled. He explained to them the Dharma, and when oaths were exchanged, all promised to serve him. In the practice of worldly actions, one often acts amiss. Seeing by the eye of intuition what must be won over, Padma knew that it would be so with the kingdom of Zahur. Therefore, he considered this region to be converted. On the northwest frontiers, in the land of Uddiyana, in the center of the capital of Zahur, in his master palace, City of Jewels, was the head of the kingdom, Arsadara. He was surrounded by 360 queens, by 720 ministers, foreign and domestic, and held all Zahur under his jurisdiction. A short time later, the queen Hauki had a dream that a tortoise stupa was, turquoise stupa was coming forth from her head, and that the kingdom of Zahur was scorched by 8 suns which arose together. She told the dream to the king, who, after thinking it over, offered a great sacrifice in celebration. Now, to the aged queen who was visited by the dream, an uneasiness arose, the happy omen of a birth. She felt light and agile in her feet. A number of sons and daughters of the gods surrounded her with reverence. She felt well-being. Her understanding did not waver. On her were 100,000 octillions, of splendors and accumulated benedictions. So, let's take a moment to appreciate. 1,000,000 times 1,000 is 1,000,000,000. Times 1,000 is 1,000,000,000,000. 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 100,000 of those of splendors and accumulated benedictions were on her. That's a lot. Sorry, I just had to take a moment to appreciate that. The ecstasy which she experienced completely exalted her. Yeah, I imagine it would at that point. This announcement was carried to the king, who, joyously seeing in it the promise of a son, had great honors bestowed upon the queen. Though they were hoping for a prince, a daughter was born. The king, vexed, accused the queen of lying. The queen, in despair, wondering why a son had not born as the dream, a son was not born as the dream foretold, sent for a Brahmin doctor and showed him her little daughter. The Brahmin bathed the little girl with perfumed water and, laying out a piece of white felt between sun and the shade, placed the child upon it and noted the signs. Then, unable to contain himself, he burst into tears and bowed down to both the queen and the child. Quote, "Are the omens bad? What are they? Speak truly, do not lie." End quote. And the Brahmin replied, quote, "Bad? No, they are remarkable, embellished by the 32 auspicious omens, so attractive that one would never tire of gazing upon her."
If you had the kind of legs you'd like to suck on for a day.
Thank you, Leslie Nielsen. She is not of human lineage. She is a Dakini of knowledge who has appeared in the abodes of men. Whoever will be her husband will be an emperor. And if she decides to abandon the world and enter into religion, she will guide, life and body, the kingdom of Zahur. No one has ever had such preeminent signs. End quote. And he gave her the name of Princess Mandravi. Mandravi, what? It's my Princess Mandravi. Silver, she can use a polish. I'll put her up here with Padmasambhava. Now she grew in a day more than others in a month, and likewise in a month more than others in a year. When she reached 13 years, the Dakinis of knowledge proclaimed it at the 8 points of space, and many suitors. It's a different time, keep in mind. Coming to see the princess became competitors for her person. Joy and harmony accompanied her. She shone brilliantly in heart and mind, and revealed the most rare beauty. As a bride price for the young girl, the king of India offered a marvelous horse, precious stones, pieces of gold, the king of China, tea, a caravan of fine silk, and 100 horsemen athletes, the king of Bengal, 300 elephants loaded with various riches, the king of Baida, a white lioness adorned with miraculous gems, the king of Udiana offered jewels in profusion, the king of Kashmir, a quantity of antidotes, the king of Khotan, piles of coins, the king of Persia, a number of ladies of quality, the king of Gisar, many harnesses and weapons, the king of Zhangzhung, numerous flocks of sheep. Of the history unabridged. of the lives of the Guru of Udayana, Padmasambhava. This is the 37th canto, the glance at the region to be converted. Sealed oaths. So what do you think? Do you want to hear more about Mandravi, or should I just close and do the closing prayer? Yeah, well, let's read a little more. Okay. Canto 38. Princess Mandrava's discovery of the flesh of a Brahmin's body. Then the king of Zahur, Arsadara, his heart care-laden, arose from sleep and mused, quote, "This daughter of mine is bringing me many enemies. If I give her to one king, the others will be enraged. If I had 10 daughters like her and gave one to each, they would be satisfied. Or if she did not exist, that also would do." End quote. So, looking for a solution, he held lengthy counsel with 10 ministers of the interior, and the unanimous decision was to consult the princess and to send her wherever she wished to go. This decision having been reached, he sent for the princess. Quote, "You yourself choose where you wish to go. You will be bestowed upon whomever you like." End quote. Immediately she was choked with weeping and said amid her tears, quote, "I will not go to anyone." End quote. The father replied, quote, "What is the use of refusing? The suitors are watching all the doors. Think it over for 3 days and then tell me your choice." End quote. The princess went up to the solitary spire of the castle, sat down with 3 of her handmaidens, and reflected day and night. Quote, "I was not born in a world despised amid the 3 damnations, but in a decent world with a woman's body. And though I am only a woman, I will attain awakening." With a capital A. "I was not born in an unfavorable region, too large or too small, but in a central region, in Jambudvipa. I was not born in a land despised among the Mon or savage folk, but in a favorable land, in Zahur. I was not born with incompleteness or defective senses, but with complete senses, alert and unblemished. I was not born with an inferior mind, falling into the power of demons, but with a keen intelligence in order to acquire self-mastery. I was not born with unwholesome karma to practice evil, but with positive karma in order to venerate the Dharma. I was not born in a caste despised, a daughter of the dregs of the people, but in a high caste, and daughter of a king. Now, with my person inhabiting a woman's body, of high lineage, good karma, and very wealthy, kings are quarreling over me. When, in the preceding life, one has followed the holy Dharma, one's karma is strengthened. If during this life I do not follow the Dharma, I do not know what body will next be mine. And to come upon the Dharma again is difficult. To put an end to karma, I have abandoned spurious undertakings. To put an end to karma, I must be a practitioner of the true Dharma. I think it would be wrong of me not to do so. When, with the amassing of sorrows, one's faults prove to be too heavy of a burden, one must stop. Though renunciation is her goal, the dependent is but dust. However admirable the qualities of the husband, we would be companions in misery for life. a gold-embellished heifer and a bull. As for me, whatever my merits, I would be a perfect watchdog for the beautiful adornments. Without a moment's respite for each other, for either mouth or hand, I would wander a helpless prey to error's aimless acts. It is time to be free. I must follow the Dharma. End quote. And the princess stood before her father, saying, quote, any other dwelling would grieve me just as this one does. I will not tread the paths of the world. If I am free to do so, I will follow the holy Dharma. Otherwise, I will cast off this body and express the wish that I may receive another better fitted for following the Dharma. End quote. Hearing these words, the king, displeased, placed around her 500 servants, to whom he gave the order, quote, do not let her leave the palace. If there is suicide or flight, all 500 servants will be fed alive to the dogs. End quote. As was the custom in that country, the king went to the palace of each of his queens and spent the night with each in turn. Each queen then had to see the king's repast. When the turn of old Queen Hauki arrived, because of the numerous suitors, all the meat had been eaten round about, so not one meat dish could be served. Not trusting anyone else to make the appropriate purchase, the queen sent the Princess Mandravi to the market to buy meat, but it was raining in torrents and the market was empty. As the princess was returning at one side of the road, she saw a dead child, about 8 years old, washed by the rain. Realizing it was the appropriate time, she carefully separated the muscles from the four limbs, put them in a bag, and returned to the palace. The queen asked her, quote, did you get meat? End quote. Quote, yes, I did. End quote, she replied. Quote, then cook it, end quote, said the queen. The princess cooked it, basting it time and again, and after she had abundantly seasoned it with spices. Quote, mother, end quote, she said. Quote, it is cooked, you may serve it, end quote. So the queen served the king his meal. But as he was digesting it, the meat burnt his body like the fires of bliss. Jumping to the height of 1 fathom above the rug, he almost flew like a bird. For this reason, he took the meat to be that of a Brahmin 7 times born. The king, as though he were shouting at a deaf man, cried, Hauki! Summoned before the king, the queen arrived. With his left hand, he seized the artery at her throat, and with a dagger in his right, he touched his wife with the point while undulating like an elephant's trunk, carrying food to the mouth. Quote, that the meat you served me this morning, will you tell me where it came from? If you do not, I will kill you. End quote. The terrified queen could not resist. Quote, I do not know. Ask Mandravi. Mandrava. I'm sure I'm not pronouncing it correctly. My apologies. Rice alone would not do. I sent her shopping in the market. End quote. So the king let her go. Quote, very well. Send Mandrava to me. End quote. Having been fetched by the queen, the princess appeared. With his left hand, the king seized her by the throat, and holding a dagger in the right, he touched the young girl with its point. Quote, where did you buy the meat you served me? Will you tell me? Otherwise I will kill you. End quote. The princess was terrified, but she could not lie. Quote, my mother told me to go and buy a great deal of meat. It was raining hard and there was no market. As I was returning, at one side of the road was the body of a child, washed by the rain. I poured out the rice from a cloth bag, put in it the muscles which I took from the limbs, cooked it all to a turn, added water, seasoned it, and served it. Was it poisoned? Was it wrong? End quote. Then the king said, quote, bring the corpse here. End quote. The princess wondered whether it would still be by the road, or whether birds and wild beasts might not have devoured it. She hastened along to get the body. It was still there, so she carried it off and gave it to her father, at which he was content. Using a stone to pound feet, hands, head, trunk, flesh, skin, and everything else, he made many little pellets out of it, and put them in a coffer adorned with the 7 precious substances. He sealed the opening with the same 7 substances, hid it all like a treasure in the cemetery garden of joy, and enjoined the Mamo and the Dakinis to watch over it. Leaving the Marajit Dakinis to guard it, he laid down an indicator of the time along with the flesh of the history, unabridged, of the lives of the Guru of Udiana, Padmasambhava. This is the 38th canto, Princess Mandrava's discovery of the flesh of a Brahmin's body. Sealed oaths. Om What do you think? Should I read one more? Just one more. Canto 39. Princess Mandrava abandons the world to follow the Dharma. Then Princess Mandrava escaped from the palace by a secret door and went to a place several miles away to the east, taking off her garments of silk and discarding all her ornaments. She said to her confidant, quote, take these and return with them, end quote. But the woman replied, quote, how could I, and leave you behind? What am I to do? Tell me, come back with me, end quote. Mandrava arose, pressing her hands together, and did repeated obeisance to the guardians of the 8 points of the earth. Quote, the deeds of the Buddha Dharma arise from knowledge, not desire, end quote, she said. She took her ornaments and her many rings, crushed them beneath a stone, and threw them skyward behind her. Quote, I pray that my intentions be released in keeping with the Dharma, and that I leave no place for the temptations a betrothed girl feels, end quote. With that, she tore into strips her clothing of fine silk and hurled these to the 8 points of the earth. Quote, may I never reacquire a body dressed thus. May I take leave of the 8 worldly concerns. End quote. She pulled out all her hair, and having become as bald as an urn, she ravaged her face by plowing it with scratches. The confidant voiced loud lamentations. Her confidant, the person with her. Quote, queen over men, though you hold the country's scepter, you have abandoned it. By acting thus and adopting this sort of life out of pure goodness, you force those who care for you to cry for help. Princess, consider whether your father and mother will agree to this, end quote. But the princess told her confidant, quote, though this body does not shelter a male soul, it will suffice. May I, without conflict with the Dharma, reach attainment. End quote. And she put on pieces of ragged fur that had been thrown away. Quote, I have severed attachment to the world, brushed aside impurity as though it were a straw. pledged body, speech, and mind, and taken a vow of silence. Smeared with red color, I am preparing myself for solitary meditation. And so I will remain, drinking water and appeasing my hunger with earth. End quote. Thereupon, since Mandarava refused to return, the weeping confidant returned alone to the palace, and in the presence of the father and the mother vented her grief in this verse. Quote, "Alas! The princess has taken on the color of the water buffaloes. She who bore all the favorable signs, peerless and comely of feature, equal in beauty to light glancing on beryl, swan-like her voice's tone, gentle and calm, without hate or rage, smiling, serene by pity alone, held back from the desire to live, kind as a mother to her serving men and women, and to all her retinue, assembling the Udumbara flower. Since the kings of the 10 directions sought to make her their prey, she would not remain in the palace and took refuge in the Dharma." That is the princess's story, and try as I might, my advice was not heeded. End quote. Having said this, she broke into tears. The king then went forth from his palace, and together with the queen went in search of the princess, making many inquiries. The confidant, sobbing, wiped away her tears. Quote, "Dear lord, king, master of men, hear me. Though first of rank among all the women divine, she was not dizzied by the palace, but left it. She has humiliated her body with red paint. And she gave me her jewels and said, quote within quotes, my friend, go back, end quote within quotes. I ran as fast as I could, but she did not return. So Mandrava, consecrated to the deities, having cast off her garments and dressed like a beggar woman, quenching her thirst with water and eating earth, her legs crossed without moving, remains at the level of the ground, for she has been surfeited with dainties and with luxury," end quote. The news went out to the kings and princes, in letters carefully composed, that because Mandrava has dedicated herself to the Dharma, the suitors could not set her on worldly paths. Grinding their teeth, each of them bore off his riches and returned to his own country. Then King Arsadara had the abbot Santarakṣita, son of King Gomati, received the princess's vows, and honor was restored. Now, in order that the princess should practice the Dharma, 500 serving women also became ordained, and a palace was built for them a little apart. Kings, ministers, and subjects did her honor. In the mornings, in full tranquility of mind, she gave herself up to ecstasy. In the evenings, following the gentle, verdant slope, she, herself azure, walked in the open meadows and in the beautiful countryside, scented by every kind of flower. Of the history unabridged of the lives of the Guru of Udayana, Padmasambhava. This is the 39th canto. Princess Mandrava abandons the world to follow the law. Sealed Odes. In this context, they translate, usually they don't translate Dharma into law, but I think in the title. Right. Well, that was lovely. That was that by far. I've had this statue for 8 years. And my old friend Sal was opening the Crooked Path in Burbank. And I went there, and I think it was the same day I recorded this conversation with him, which I'm embarrassed about. It was a few weeks before I left California forever and came to India, and I've been here for almost 8 years. Anyway, that same moment was when I got this statue. There were two. There was a statue of Namgyalma. I think I'm getting the name right. She's here. This is a different one. This is one I got in Delhi. But there was a silver Namgyalma, and I left that with a friend. And I brought the Mandravi with me to India. And anyway, so it's good to hear her story. I think we're going to continue to hear her story in Buddhist Books, episode 290. So if you want to hear what comes next for her, then do please subscribe and click like on this video. And then the algorithm will let you know when I come out with the next one, especially if you hit that bell. It's up to you, whatever you want to do. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me for this. And I will go ahead and do the usual closing. To the north and to the south, to the east and to the west, to the spirits of light among us and to the spirits below, we send out our reverent love and compassion. May all beings be happy. May all beings be serene. May all beings be in peace. Until next time.